Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome to Between the Lines, the stories behind great sports writing. My name is Martin Gregg and this is my conversation with James Pearce. James is the brilliantly connected Liverpool writer for The Athletic, and a lot of his writing makes up our latest book, At the End of the Storm, and is out today. The book is a collection of pieces from The Athletic telling the story of Liverpool's historic title triumph, and James is the star of the show. You're going to hear a little bit about James's background and how his years at the Liverpool Echo primed him for taking his coverage of the club to a new level when he joined The Athletic in the summer of 2019. You'll also hear James break down a piece he wrote after Liverpool's Super Cup win over Chelsea in August. This is a brilliant episode with a writer at the peak of his power. Enjoy. So James, I want to start by talking a bit about timing. It's interesting that you had all these years at the Liverpool Echo, which of course weren't barren years. I mean, there's probably a couple of Champions Leagues in there, but you take this job at the Athletic and then 30 years of hurt finally come to an end. Incredible coincidence. In terms of your first year in this job, I mean, you really couldn't have scripted it any better, could you?
No, it was amazing, really. Yeah, I think, even I was... During my long stint at the Liverpool Echo, I was beginning to think I was the jinx because it had been a pretty barren run. And then, no sooner had I agreed to join the Athletic. Of course, my final game for the Echo was the Champions League final. So that was a hell of a way to sign off, that being my last game at the Echo after 14 years there. And then an unbelievable first year with the Athletic, just to be there every step of the way. And there was a feeling right there from the start that this could be a very, very special season, and that it did feel like winning the Champions League was such a huge lift to everyone after all the near misses of recent years. And the following year proved to be a pretty amazing journey.
Your exhilaration and excitement comes through in the copy as the season progresses. The one moment where it really, really jumps out is the November victory over Man City, which I think you call it a statement victory. And, I think the passion and the energy in the stadium really comes through in your piece. That must have been a really kind of memorable night for you as a sports writer to see that take place.
Yeah, it was, because I think, it was one of those ones where I think when you look back now on the season, of course Liverpool ran away with it from the start, really. But I think because of what had happened the year before, and by getting reeled in by Man City, there was always that nagging feeling, especially when the lead was still, not insurmountable, that City could come back and that City could put together the kind of run to really put Liverpool under pressure. So yeah, that just felt like such a huge win for Klopp's Liverpool. The manner in which they did it as well. Yeah, and the Anfield was absolutely rocking that day, because it was the modern rivalry between Liverpool and City is certainly kind of gone up a couple of notches in the past two seasons. And I think watching Pep Guardiola's meltdown on the touchline was probably just as satisfying for Liverpool fans as Jurgen Klopp throwing fist pumps in the other dugout.
I want to talk a little bit about the differences from covering Liverpool for the Echo to the Athletic, which must be vast, I would guess. And we did a wee podcast with Neil and Pete last week, and Neil describes how he thought you must have felt super powered by moving from the Echo to the Athletic, and I think what he was hinting at was, I guess, kind of moving from the old model of journalism to the new one. What are the differences? I mean, is it a question of you have more time to do stuff? Do you have a better budget? What were the big differences for you in terms of how you used to cover this club to how you started covering it when you started at the Athletic?
Yeah, I'd say the differences are absolutely immense, really. Just everything in terms of the structure of my week and the work flow. And I think probably the biggest thing, and certainly the biggest attraction for me when I was first approached by the Athletics owners probably in May time of 2019 was just this chance to do articles in more depth, and given the time and space to do things you really wanted to do, and almost it felt like kind of getting off the hamster wheel of you know, just having to repeatedly churn out things to meet WebHit requirements, which was essentially, you know, the task at the Echo. You know, I was writing 5, 6, sometimes 7 stories a day, you know, quite often you didn't really get the chance to really plan. It was quite often just continually reacting to events, and the press conference, match report, mix zone, press conference again, just, you know, especially with a game every 3 or 4 days, you're just in that cycle. And it was, from the start, it was clear that this job would give me the chance to just step away from that. And, you know, it was just really refreshing to be told, look, we don't want you to be doing what everyone else is doing. You know, we don't need every cough and spit from Jurgen Klopp's half an hour long press conference. You know, we'd rather, you know, those quotes are going to be available in 20, 30 other places, and we'd rather you spent that time doing something else. And so it's, you know, I've gone from probably doing 5, 6, 7 pieces a day to 3 a week. But, you know, some people say to me, or it must be so easy now compared to before. And I'd say it definitely isn't easier. In some ways it's harder, because you could almost do the old job almost on autopilot, going from press conference to game to press conference continually, where I'd say this is a lot more challenging, but also, you know, a lot more satisfying.
Yeah, it's interesting that of trying to come up with new and inventive ways to look at the club and look at the themes that are playing out in this great football team and the club in general. I think it probably leads quite nicely onto the piece that I want to talk to you about, which was a piece, I guess it's sort of pivoting around the UEFA Super Cup win over Chelsea in August, but really more importantly it's the aftermath of that and the lead into the Southampton game. So obviously the Super Cup game is on the Wednesday night, and then by the time, you know, they're doing the lap of honour, it's the early hours of Thursday morning, and then the clock starts, and then from that point onwards they have this race against time to be in reasonable physical and mental condition for the Southampton game on the Saturday. So the headline of the piece is how videos, NASA technology and car power helped Liverpool avoid the biggest banana skin in history. Now, I think this is a really interesting piece, because, you know, perhaps the most obvious piece could have been for you to have done a colour piece reflecting on Liverpool being back in Istanbul and this great moment and all the rest of it. But instead, you have this fantastic countdown to how Liverpool are going to manage this very short time period and still manage to be on top of their game. Essentially, it's a marginal gains piece. But I guess what I want to start by asking you, how did you come up with the idea for that piece?
Yeah, well, I think it kind of goes back to, again, having that luxury of time and space to try and be creative, where I probably didn't used to get that in my previous role. And certainly from the start with the Athletic, I was told, you know, yes, we want you to be at matches. Yes, we want pieces around matches, but we don't want conventional analysis pieces that, you know, of the type that people can read anywhere else. That we want it to be different. And I think also the other big thing was something that kind of that people were still going to find interesting to pick up and read in, you know, 3, 4, 5 months further down the line. The idea emanated from the fact that I knew from speaking to a few of the staff members at Liverpool that Jurgen Klopp wasn't happy with the scheduling, that he felt that it was ridiculous Liverpool were having to play on the Saturday away at Southampton, you know, after, what was it, 3,500-mile round trip to Istanbul for the Super Cup. He felt that should have been shifted to a Sunday game. But also the fact that he wasn't going to complain publicly, Klopp, because in terms of the psychology of it, he felt that would almost be giving the players a ready-made excuse if you start bleating in the media about, you know, how unfair it is. So yeah, it just got me thinking that, you know, it'd be really interesting to try and find out as much as possible how they're going to handle that. Almost trying to break down, probably not quite hour for hour, but not hopefully not too far off in terms of managing that from very late on the Wednesday night, you know, later than I'm sure Liverpool ideally would have wanted, with that game going to penalties in Istanbul, to walking out at St Mary's on the Saturday afternoon. And involved speaking to, you know, a whole host of different people, from players to backroom staff members to people involved in the travel plans at the club. Yeah, it was nice that, you know, something that took a fair bit of work over a 3 or 4 or 5 days, you know, came together nicely in the end.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I love about the piece is that the central characters are not Klopp and Henderson and Salah and all these great personalities. They very much are the backroom staff. So the physios, the masseuses, the video analysis team, all these people coming together. But I'd be interested to know, in terms of getting the necessary material from them, did you set them up in advance? Did you say to them, look, this is the type of piece I'm going to be writing. I'd like to have some feedback from you over the next few days, and this is the story I want to tell. How did you set the piece up, if you like?
Yeah, Jimmy, it was a real mix, actually. I'd love to say that it was pristine planning all coming to the plan working out perfectly. It wasn't quite like that. I think, you know, I teed up a couple of people that I was able to get some updates from it over that period. But it was, you know, in terms of the best source of information for that piece was actually waiting around outside St Mary's on the Saturday after that game. And again, I guess it goes back again to the differences in this job compared to the previous one, where in the previous one, you know, Liverpool have just ground out a narrow 2-1 win at Southampton. It would be all about trying to get as many quotes as possible in the mix zone. Now, the mix zone at St Mary's is actually outside, and you actually find yourself not too far away from where the away coach is waiting. So I kind of made a bit of a decision that let's not worry too much about player quotes. Why don't we just hang around by the back of Liverpool's team coach, and, you know, as and when various backroom staff members stick their stuff in the back of the coach, you can have a word with them, you know, off the record. And so that was kind of a real kind of rich source of information, actually, just having a brief chat with 3, 4, 5 members of staff about, you know, what have the last few days been like, you know, what have you done differently, that, you know, thankfully really supplemented the other things that I'd got teed up in advance. And I think the big thing for me was, you know, it kind of opens your eyes to just the sheer amount of work that goes into trying to get a football team ready to perform to its absolute peak abilities. You know, Jurgen Klopp refers to them as the team behind the team, and, you know, right from the NASA technology and the icing machines that go around, that they're passing around the plane to ease, you know, weary limbs on that long journey back from Istanbul, to, you know, the kind of motivational messages pinned up around Melwood and nutritional advice, like, you know, I think carb power was one of them, you know, and talking about rest. And of course, the other thing, I suppose, the big factor was just how important video analysis is when you have such a quick turnaround, when you can't, it's just not realistic to push players physically. Those team meetings with the video, you know, as I think a detail, you know, Peter Krawitz and the analysis spelling out exactly where they felt Southampton could hurt Liverpool and vice versa, where Liverpool could hurt Southampton. You know, that was such a key tool in a period where Liverpool had such a short period of time to prepare.
It's interesting. I mean, if you're looking for the place where probably the most dramatic action in this piece takes place, it's actually on the flight back from Istanbul. And you mentioned that a bit there, you know, the icing machine that's getting passed around the players. One of the lines that stayed with me was the head physio who spends 3 out of the 4 hours on the flight back working on Adrian's ankle. He's picked up this ankle injury from, I think it was a fan running onto the park and stepping on his ankle. So his ankle is ballooned up. And for 3 out of the 4 hours, this physio is working on his ankle all the way back to Britain from Istanbul. It's incredible stuff.
Yes. That was, you know, a lot of these people, obviously, usually all of their work and commitment goes kind of under the radar, really. So it was nice to be able to highlight, you know, the importance of people like physio Lee Nobes and Masseur Paul Small, who, you know, even in Istanbul, they'd stayed over the night of the final, and those two were up, you know, at the crack of dawn, you know, getting everything ready for early treatment sessions. And then, as you said, you know, coming into their own on the flight back, in terms of, I think, as well as Adrian, you know, it was, you know, someone, one of the staff said to me that Adrian would have had absolutely no chance of playing in that game against Southampton, but for all of that work on the plane coming back. And, you know, when you think that you know, Alisson, of course, was out injured himself at the time. You know, that would have had big implications for Liverpool if he hadn't been fit to play in that game. So it was nice to be able to give people a glimpse into you know what went on behind the scenes to get Liverpool into a position where they could win that game, because Southampton are no mugs and they'd had the luxury of a full week to prepare.
It's interesting you talked earlier on about trying to make pieces timeless, I guess, so that you can read back in 6, 9, 12 months' time and still get plenty from it. And I think another aspect of the piece which I think is really important is the insight into Klopp's psychology and how he handles his relationship with the players. And I've got a quote down here from the piece where he says, "Everyone is waiting for it. Probably all the headlines are written already." He said, I would prefer the headline, "The Mentality Giants Were in Town," which actually became quite an iconic Klopp quote, actually. But, yeah, you know, he's manipulating the psychology of the players, I guess, in that situation to say, you know, you can't even subconsciously let yourself off the hook because this is a challenge in front of us and we need to approach it in a really professional way.
Yeah, and it does fascinate me, Klopp and psychology. And, I was actually doing a big interview last week with Lee Richardson, Liverpool's performance psychologist. And he was saying that, you know, he said, "I'm not really Liverpool's psychologist." He said, Klopp is the head psychologist. He said, I just kind of pick up some of the work around the edges. And, I know it's a topic that has always fascinated Klopp. It formed part of his sports science degree that he did when he was still a footballer at Mainz in like the mid-90s. And especially when you consider that English isn't his first language, he is a master at finding the right words at the right times. And, you know, there's just such a subtle difference, isn't there, between, you know, I said earlier on about Klopp not wanting to give players excuses. And, you know, there is a big difference between slaughtering the people that make the schedule and saying, you know, this is ridiculous, or just tweaking it slightly and coming out and saying, you know, the headlines are already written. People expect us to slip, you know, the biggest banana skin in history. People are expecting us to fall flat on our faces here today. And, you know, it certainly did the trick. I think, you know, and again, you know, I know from speaking to players for the piece that it wasn't just what he said to them pre-match. It was half-time as well, because, you know, Liverpool weren't great first half in that game, yet, you know, there was the motivational side and then also the tactical tweaks of, you know, making sure that the two fullbacks were operating further up the field, that he felt there was too big a gap between the front three and the midfield. And, everything just came together in terms of that second half. And, you know, I suppose also what ties in with that kind of marginal gains approach of Klopp is the fact that both Liverpool goals that day came from throw-ins. And you know, some people scoffed when it emerged that Liverpool had employed a throw-in coach in Thomas Gronemark, and little things like that, you know, those extra little 1% that Klopp always looks for, you know, over the course of a season, especially a title-winning season like that, you know, made a huge difference.
It's interesting because then you take your idea for this piece into the Southampton game. So the things that you're looking for in that game are dictated by, you know, this concept that you've got. So you're looking for, I guess, game management, how they approach that. Really interesting. The Gronemark stuff is fantastic because it feeds into this marginal gains thing of, like, you know, the throw-in coach plays his little part in this, like, you know, 72-hour period and getting the right results from it. But it must be quite nice as a journalist to go into that game, like, almost knowing what you're looking for. Would that be the case? Are you kind of thinking, right, now I need to look at how the team approaches the game and these little things that can feed into building up this piece even more?
Yeah, and I think that's probably, again, a big difference in this job compared to previously, where before previously I would pretty much, you know, usually turn up blind in terms of having a plan in terms of what I was going to write about, and you're always, everything you write is dictated by events. I think the big difference now, and that, it tended to be the case for the vast majority of games last season, that you would go to a game already with a piece pretty clear in your head, that, you know, and that was probably the perfect example of a piece coming together perfectly, because I think if you'd asked me beforehand, you know, what ideally, you know, you've got a piece that's probably half written, you know, and hopefully, you know, has got the makings of a decent, interesting, informative read, but, you know, it wouldn't have been quite so good, I think, if Liverpool had ended up getting absolutely battered that day by Southampton. You know, the fact that they had to dig deep and grind it out, and it did come down to the very small margins. I think almost it was I couldn't have written it better, really, because it tied in perfectly with all those little things, all of the the nutrition, the video, the medical side of things, all those little 1% that added up to make the difference on the day. And there's other times when there was plenty of times last season as well where it wouldn't be quite so fortunate, and that you'd end up completely ripping up your plans and starting again, because I think there's always a bit of a tricky balance in that between wanting to be different but also making sure it's still relevant as well, because it's with all the will in the world, if everyone is talking about one massive hot issue, sometimes there isn't really anything to be gained by going off on some other mad tangent and doing something completely different. I guess probably Burnley away would be the best example of that, when, I can't remember exactly what I had lined up, but it was whatever the idea was, that went out the window once Mane and Salah had their spat, once, Sadio Mane fuming when he came off because Salah hadn't passed to him, and something like that. The reality is, when everyone's talking about something like that, you still have a duty to react to that and try and find out everything to try and inform when something is significant like the Salah Mane spat. Suddenly you drop everything and you're making calls and speaking to people to try and find out whether they've buried the hatchet and moved on.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it is a perfect example of how the actual narrative fits your idea for the story perfectly, and I guess to some extent you're fortuitous in that. But also, I mean, even if Liverpool lost 3-0 that day, it's not wasted work, because that Liverpool have these things in place. You'll be able to return to that concept at some point in the season.
Yeah,
again,
yeah 100%. I think I found that quite a lot actually over the course of the season, that when plans didn't come together, very rarely did any significant research and work go to waste, because you're right, it's if it hadn't worked for that game, it would have worked further on down the line in terms of the team behind the team piece. So yeah, it is definitely all. I like the fact you tend to, the way we operate, you have one of the deskers down in London that you're in regular contact with, and you kind of always have a chat before you go to a game in the days leading up to it, to kind of agree, right, what are the possible themes, let's try and make a start on at least a couple of them, so that if one does come to fruition, we can turn it around pretty quickly, hopefully, with informed information that gives the reader something that they're not going to be able to access anywhere else.
Thank you for listening to Between the Lines. Check out our archive, and if you want to buy a copy of At the End of the Storm, it is out now in hardback and ebook from today. The buy link is in the show notes to this episode.